Be here with you guys all for the global press conference of Onward. Some very special folks about to come up. So, without further ado, please welcome the producer, Corey Ray. The director, Dan Scanlon. And he plays Ian, the shy but lovable elf with a surprising knack for magic, Tom Holland. And he plays Ian's older brother, Barley, the burly adventure seeker, Chris Pratt. There we go. That's better. So, hi, guys.
Hey.
Well, first off, congrats on this film. Congrats on crafting, I think, the first film in Hollywood history that is making us cry over a disembodied pair of legs.
Thank you.
It is hilarious and heartfelt and so emotional. And Dan, I want to start with you. Tell us a little bit about, I know this is a very deeply personal story for you. So tell us a little bit about the origins of the story and what it means to you to be able to tell this on the big screen.
Yeah, you know, it is a very personal story, much like the characters in the movie. My father passed away when I was about a year old and my brother was three. So as you can imagine, we don't remember him at all, but we always wondered, you know, who he was and how we were like him. And I think that question became the seed of Onward, which is, what if you could meet him? What if you could have one day? What would you learn? What would you ask? And and then we added elves and sprites to that incredibly sad story.
When did you start writing this?
About 6 years ago.
Okay.
And at Pixar, it takes, you know, a really long time to do the animation, but also the majority of that time is spent on story and rewriting and, you know, getting notes on it and thoughts on it. Mm-hmm.
And you're reteaming with Corey, who you guys worked together previously on your directorial debut, Monsters University. Corey, an amazing cast that you've assembled for this film. Not only Tom and Chris, but you've got Octavia Spencer, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Tell us a little bit about bringing this cast together and also what they brought to these roles that wasn't on the page.
Yeah, well, thanks to these two amazing gentlemen and the rest of the cast. What we found is how invested everybody got in the film. I think because it was based on this personal story that was pretty emotional, everybody was really into it and into the role that they had. So Octavia Spencer, she had a challenging role as the Manticore because it's basically two characters, mm-hmm. but she just brought it and was amazing. Julia, obviously, so incredibly funny, and portrayed Laurel Lightfoot in just a really humorous but beautiful way. And then Tom and Chris, just amazing. I mean, we are forever grateful for how much they invested themselves into the roles and how they really, really took the characters and elevated them and made them so much more complex and real within the film that it's amazing.
And just to talk to you about you guys for a second while you're still sitting here.
Exactly. It's not uncomfortable, is it?
You know, when we originally wrote Ian, he was a little more, I think, at times sarcastic, and Tom brought a sincerity to him and a vulnerability to him that was crucial in a way that I didn't quite understand. It just naturally comes from him. And then Chris, was very protective of Barley. Barley's kind of a goofball and crazy character, and we'd write scenes where, you know, and then Barley's pants fall down, and he falls down the stairs, and Chris was always like, well, he's not an idiot. Like, he's a well-intentioned guy who's trying to help, and he was a protector of Barley as a character and as a human being or an elf.
Yeah.
And so that's what, you know, in, I think in any writing, but especially in animation, we live with these characters for a long time, and then the performers come in and they make them real and they give them heart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Tom and Chris, tell us a little bit about your characters in your own words and how you related to these two very handsome elves.
I think it's interesting. I'm the oldest brother of four, and Chris is the youngest brother of two and a sister.
Yeah.
So we kind of switched. So now I'm playing the younger brother and he's playing the older brother. So it's really nice for us to kind of make that switch. And because Chris and I are obviously so close already, before we even came onto this film, it was almost like we were just playing ourselves. But the similarities between Ian and myself go back to more when I was sort of in my early teens, 12, 13. I was a little bit of an introvert. I was a very nervous kid and I had a hard time at school, and it wasn't until I went on this adventure that was Billy Elliot where I sort of came out of my shell and I became more confident in myself and I believed in myself. And what drew me so much to this character was that we get to see that entire journey that I went on as a kid in him throughout this film. So I just was really happy to kind of pour my past experiences into this process. And I'm really delighted and thrilled to where we got to.
How about you, Chris?
Hello. These couches are really nice looking. I don't know who made them, but this is built for somebody who has a room that no one will ever sit in. It's a couch for a very rich person. Because as soon as someone sits on this couch, you'll be like, yeah, let's take this back. Let's get rid of this couch. So just a quick criticism of the couch before I open.
Thank you.
Yeah. One thing that I really like in seeing, and I'm not sure that I was ever intentional or if I just noticed this while watching the movie, but it was a note that Dan gave me that was actually against my own instinct. But I'm very glad that we went with what he wanted to on this, which was Barley was never jealous of the fact that he didn't have the magic gift. And I think that, to me, I didn't realize until seeing the movie, was very something very similar to my own relationship with my brother, in which I was the Ian. I was the younger brother. Have you guys seen the movie?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So you know what I'm talking about. So
I haven't. They won't show me until the premiere. I'll spoil it.
So now that you've seen the... I get so caught up, I'm trying to explain what the movie is. So if you've seen the movie, this is going to be much easier for me to describe what I'm talking about. But I was Ian, and my brother was Barley. And my brother, for instance, always wanted to be an actor. He was an actor as a... he did plays. The first time I ever saw my mom cry was watching him do a play. He was a Boo Bear in the first grade Christmas play. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Being an actor is awesome. I want to be an actor. My brother did all of these assemblies in high school, so I like followed his footsteps. I did all of the assemblies. Anyways, he went in the army and he didn't become an actor, but I became an actor. And there was that moment where Barley realizes that Ian has the gift. And he comes in, and the line, my instinct, I was like, do you think Barley wishes that he had the magic gift? Because he's the one who loves magic. He wasn't able to do this, but his younger brother was. And I think this was really the heart of the film, is like, he loves his brother so much that he's just so proud of him, that he has this gift, that he's been given this gift. And when I saw that in the movie, how it was expressed, it really made me appreciate how my brother was with me, because my whole life, he's always only, and during my career, only ever been super encouraging and positive about what I've been able to do as an actor. And I think that's what makes this brotherhood and this relationship so special, and it's why grown men come up to me and say, wow, I really was moved, I really cried, this is like Field of Dreams or Radio Flyer to me. And the reason why is because it celebrates a love between a brother and between two brothers and that brotherhood. And that oftentimes is not something you see in movies. What you see is the older brother who doesn't let the younger brother hang out with him, who doesn't take him to school, says, get out of here, nerd, get out of here, twerp. It's like that contentious brotherhood. You see that all the time. It's kind of a caricature of what real relationships are with brothers, because truth is, brothers love each other. And so I love that. I really like that. And I identify probably more with Ian in terms of my own relationship with my brother, but I really loved that moment. I'm glad that you stuck with that, because that's great. And your instincts ring through all the time. I'm always bullying directors into doing what I wanted to do, and I couldn't do that with him. And he just made me do exactly what he wanted all the time. And I'm just so glad. Like, your vision is all over this thing, and it's really, really good. It's very special. And like Bong Joon-ho said about that Martin Scorsese tweet, he's like, or that Martin Scorsese tweet, that quote. I don't think he tweeted it.
I don't think so. Definitely not on Twitter.
Yeah, he said, I'm gonna fuck it up, but he said something like,
Scorsese's definitely not gonna
creativity.
Hire
it. Something creative. The more personal you are, the more creative it is, mm-hmm. or something, the more more personal you are, the more original it is, or something like that. But this is so personal, and it's so creative, and it's so original because of you. All right. Fuck this couch, right? We got that out of the way, and I'm so proud of you.
Recapping, fuck this couch. Dan is always right. Brothers love each other.
Boom.
You nailed it. Well, Chris and Tom, you guys are sitting next to Pixar pros. I mean, between the two of you guys, you've had your hands in, I think, half of like the greatest animated films over the last 20 years with all of your credits. But what did it mean for you two to enter the world of Pixar for the first time?
I think for every young actor, you set yourself goals, and I have mine, that I've set out since I was a kid, and they're still the same today, and one of them was being in a Pixar movie. So when you guys were kind enough to fly all the way to London to meet me and to tell me your story and to then pitch me the movie, I firstly was just so honored. It was the first time anyone had come to me. I was like, this is amazing, and it's Pixar. So it was a very easy decision. I was, you know, you don't say no to Pixar because they're the best. And the nicest thing about it is they have this kind of family feel that Marvel also has. And I feel like, and you can say if you felt the same, that we were welcomed into this wonderful family with such open arms, and it was such an amazing process. And I still can't quite believe that this film's about to come out. It feels like yesterday that we started working on it. So I'm just super pumped for people to see it and to experience this amazing thing that we've all created.
Dan and Corey, this is Pixar's entry into the fantastical realm. We've never seen the studio dive into this field before. You have elves and unicorns and cyclopses. But tell us about how you landed on that approach. You took what was a very personal story, and then you ended up in this hybrid of two worlds that I love because they could not be further apart, which is the wondrous world of Fantasyland and then suburbia. How did you land in the genre and also reach that dichotomy?
Well, you know, we needed a way in which this father could come back to life. You know, that was really the reason behind the magic. We could have done a version where, and even considered one, where the boys were scientists who built a machine that brought dad back. And the magic just felt more romanticized. And again, then we didn't want to set it in an old-timey fantasy world because it's a very modern story. And if these boys had all been in robes and their father was in robes, it just would have been ridiculous. So we thought, let's do a modern one. And there's a, like you said, there's a sort of natural humor that comes out of that. And I think the world mirrors Ian in a lot of ways. Like, the world of this movie is people who have, out of just becoming kind of complacent and even fearful of taking risks, they've lost their potential. And Ian is a kid who's never lived up to his because he's insecure and fearful. So it's always nice when the world and the characters can kind of mirror that, and we just wanted to show dirty unicorns. Dirty robbers. Barbecuing unicorns.
Yes, and we never knew it, but we wanted to see them, apparently. I know you guys have questions, so let's open it up to the floor. Yes, right here in the second row. Oh, we have a mic coming for you. Sorry, I should have mentioned that.
They can hear me anyway. Don't laugh, Alex. Congratulations, everybody. This is heart, humor, tissues are mandatory. Absolutely love it. I've got to ask Chris and Tom, the on-screen back and forth, so much overlapping with the voices, all. Did you guys actually get to be in a booth together to do the voicing, or did they separate you in order to get work done?
Well, actually both. I think there were moments where we were brought together, and I think maybe part of that had to do with just getting a model of what our relationship would be like, the, you know, how we interact with one another and goof around. And it's not the most conducive to creating clean audio tracks that are usable in the movie. So ultimately, you may see something you'd like to model the behavior on and then capture that with us separate. That was oftentimes the case, I think. I've been in, like, for instance, in the Lego movie, we did a lot of riffing. There's a lot of improv comedians in there, and there's a certain magic that comes that isn't found, that's found in the moment, that doesn't exist on the page. And I don't think that there was a lot of that in this, because the what's on the page here was so magical and so protected. So, like, we didn't colloquialize a ton, maybe a little bit, but for the most part, everything we say was what was written in the script. And so they isolated us to do that, but at the same time, they brought us together. So A, so we could shoot some promotional stuff of Tom and I together, because let's talk about the chemistry here. I mean, you know, it's now you know why it's called chemistry. You throw two chemicals together and there's a heat, an explosion sometimes, if you will, a chemical reaction. And we wanted to get that heat, you know what I mean? That's why they sat us next to us on this couch. The couch is actually it's messing actually, up the chemical.
It is. The couch itself is hot.
Yeah, it's very hot.
Yeah.
It is.
It's a chemical reaction.
So they did throw us together, and then they were able to see, like, wow, look at these two. They're like brothers. This is how they interact, and some of that was probably expressed in the movie. But yeah, we had to shoot it and record it.
It's funny with improvising on this job that you'd be improvising, and then you just get down and be like, could you just do it as scripted, please?
I like that you've put me in a booth.
In another booth. Yeah.
You. Could you please do this differently? Thank
just
you.
Do as you're told.
Yeah, we're coming in from Dan.
All right, next question. Yes, third row. Yes, you, sorry.
Hi, I loved it too. I wanted to ask Dan and Corey, where did the idea come for making the half dad, and like, where did you know where to cut him off?
You'd be amazed sitting in a story room with a group of like 10 or 12 people having a very serious conversation about that for days, weeks, months.
Where else could you cut him off?
You know, we tried it all. We thought maybe just a pair of shoes at first, I think. And then there was one version of the story where it was like shoes, and then they would get something else that would create a little bit more so that he kind of grew over the course of... I think there was a version like that.
Is it too
way
to
more
do that?
Disturbing. Like, you know, it's bad enough that one time, but yeah. So, you know, we like to do weird stuff at Pixar, you know, and so the weirder it is, the more we know that people within the studio and then hopefully outside and audiences are gonna love it.
And we also were thinking, you know, when you are someone who didn't know someone, every little piece you get is special, certainly with my dad, every little piece of information, every little object they own. And so the idea that the boys literally have a piece of their dad but is walking around felt funny, but also lined up with that idea.
I remember when you were pitching it though, and you're like, and then there's only half of him. I remember being like, okay. And where does it go from here?
All right, in the second row, in the pink, yes, hi.
Okay, so my 7-year-old wants to already know when you're going to make this into a live action. And the
fan... Is he an executive?
Yeah.
At Disney?
He wants to be. And then the actual real question is, as a family, we decided we wanted to ask you guys if you could bring back one person... Who would it be, and what would you do on that one day, the one 24 hours?
Well, there's no plans on doing a live action one. Although we did do tests of what it would look like with, you know, pants just walking around. We put green screen cloth over our faces and walked around with khaki pants on. And I did think, yeah, we could do this live action. That was fun.
That'll be on the DVD?
Yeah, probably.
It is, yeah.
One day with someone?
Yes, that would probably be my grandfather. I think much like the film, I would just want to hang out with him and probably ask him a ton of questions. My family wasn't great about passing on family history, and so there are a lot of blanks, a lot of areas that I don't know about. So I think I would just want to ask a ton of questions.
I would probably see my dad. I feel like I... and then maybe take him to see the movie, and then he'd say, nah. Like, no, I mean, you know, you're just spending a day just talking, just walking around and asking, and also letting him know what a phenomenal job my mother did raising us and how she gave us everything we could have ever wanted, and yeah.
My granddad, Bob, he never actually met his dad. His dad passed away when he was 18 months, so... I would bring back my great grandfather, so my granddad would have the opportunity to meet his dad.
So selfless.
I would probably bring back my dad, who passed away just before Guardians of the Galaxy came out, and then I would show him Guardians of the Galaxy, and then if he didn't like it, I'd bring back like a known criminal, and beat him up on like. Instagram Live or something to become popular. Because if my dad didn't like Guardians, I'd be like, all right, you go back to heaven.
All right, next question around the aisle here. Hi.
Oh, hello. All right, hi. So first of all, I just want to say, as an animation fan, I already have my predictions for Oscars, and I personally think Onward is going to be one of the nominated films.
Yes.
Woo. Yeah. And so I'm 16. I know I'm very short, and I've had to deal with the I was going to say fear, but I feel like threat is a better word for this. The threat of learning how to drive. Yeah, and that would, like, I remember because I was watching with my parents, and then when they brought that up, they both looked at me. So this has been kind of like a common thing in our family right now. So I want to know, what was your guys's, like, driving lesson experience like?
Well, I mean, it is one of the things that actually is truthful about this movie. I was terrified to drive as a kid, and I still don't drive today. I live in San Francisco, so you don't have to drive. So here's the thing. Just live in a city where you don't have to and get around it. And when I was in Michigan and told people I was scared to drive, you know, Detroit, Motor City, they'd say, "What's wrong with you?" And then going to San Francisco, when I say I don't drive, they say, "Good for you. It's so good for the environment."
Don't listen to him. Just kidding. There's one really good thing that I learned right when I was learning to drive, which was the chunk of cement closest to your house connects to every major monument in this country through a system of roads. Whatever cement your driveway connects to a road, that connects to another road, to a highway. With enough gas money and an automobile, you can see Mount Rushmore, you can see the Grand Canyon, you can see Yellowstone, you can see the White House, you can go down to the Florida Keys, you can sneak through Montana in about 17 days. You know, there's this a great and beautiful country, and it was designed to be driven across. So definitely live in a city and not have to drive in the city, but don't sleep on getting behind the wheel and just exploring this country, because we used to road trip everywhere, and it's America. It's the big wide frontier, and you can literally get anywhere if you have enough gas money.
That was the best PSA for the DMV I've ever heard.
We got to you by the Ford Edge. No matter.
We got to go all the way to the back. Yes, hi.
Well, speaking about that, so it's funny to watch the movie because you're talking about how people have left tradition behind, the magic. And so was that kind of a metaphor for what's going on today, where kids are just glued to a screen and not having fun? And for the actors, do you want to comment on, you know, what the movie kind of says, that you need to get out and explore versus sitting in front of a TV or a screen?
Yeah, I mean, I think we certainly didn't want to make a movie that was saying technology was bad, because technology is how we make our movies. It's magic in its own way. It was really a softer look at you know, the ease that comes with it, the comfort that comes with it sometimes, and just not giving up on taking the hard road a little every now and then, challenging yourself. As I mentioned earlier, magic is really a metaphor for potential in this movie. And when you look at some of the characters in the film, they're not throwing away everything modern. They're just getting in touch a little bit with that challenge in life, getting outside and trying something new.
I think the film, being called Onward, the only way to go onward is to look forward. And you can't look forward if you're looking at your phone. And that's, for me, like, I've deleted my Instagram to Disney's dismay. They're like, how are you going to promote the movie?
Individual hand letters.
Yeah.
While we're making PSAs, with stop texting and driving.
But yeah, I think the film is kind of a metaphor for, like, look out. The world is an amazing place. It's a beautiful place. Experience it through your own eyes, not through someone else's Instagram account, you know?
Yeah, amen. Right in the front here. We've got a mic coming your way.
Hi, you guys. My dad passed in September, so when I took my son to see this movie, we were both a hot mess. And he wanted the staff to bring Grandpa back. And I asked him, what did he learn from this movie? And he said that to enjoy and to love everyone around him. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you guys, what is it that you wanted your audience goers to learn watching this movie?
Boy, it was really that.
I mean, yeah, exactly that.
I think it's a film about support. And the people that go above and beyond in our lives to help us become the people we are today. And so it's absolutely about walking out of that theater and thinking, who are those people in my life? And they don't necessarily have to be family members. A lot of times they're friends or teachers. And I would go then the one step further is, you know, how can you be that for someone else? But that's really wonderful that he said
that. Yeah, thank you for sharing.
Yeah, Silas. Hey, man.
Hey. I was really curious. One of the things I wondered about metaphorically in this film is 2020 marks the 25th year of having Pixar films. And in some ways, it feels like the movie is about how do we keep magic in this world, even though we are a new generation of Pixar filmmakers. Was that an intentional angle?
Not necessarily. I think, you know, maybe it's a kind of happy accident. I think, you know, when we started talking about this idea 6.5 years ago, it was really to try to tell this personal story that we thought other audiences could really relate to. But it is exciting, you know, the future of Pixar. We have a ton of original films coming up, and it is a new decade, and we're super excited about where we're headed and what films are coming down the road. So, yeah.
All right, we've got time for a couple more in the second row.
Thank you. Chris, you talked about this a little bit earlier with your brothers and that relationship, but I wanted to toss the question to both Tom and Chris about maybe something you think you've taught your brothers in real life or they've taught you that you brought into the movie.
Great game. No, what have I taught my brothers?
I'm sure so much.
I'm how to be gracious losers when they lose at golf. Maybe that's what I've taught them, because I'm a terrible loser. So they've learned not what to do from their big brother. Maybe that's what it is for me.
It's such a good question, because I could list for days the things that I learned from my brother, but it's hard for me to think of anything I might have taught him. God, I'd like to, I'm going to call him immediately and make him tell me the things. God, you know, I always just did I would literally wear his clothes the day after he wore them. I picked them up off of his floor and put his clothes on because he had nice smelling cologne and he knew he had style. He knew how to match his clothes and stuff. I still don't know how to do that. Stylist does all this. I have no idea how to do that. And I would, until we started going to the same school and I caught up in age and I was like a freshman when he was a junior and his friends started to notice and he kindly said, "Hey man, I think you need to stop wearing my clothes the day after me because my friends are noticing that." And so, like, I it's hard for me to imagine what anything that I'm about to say I know is, like, my first instinct was, like, be yourself and be comfortable with who you are. And I'm like, I didn't teach him. He told me that all the time. So, like, I can't think of anything that I know that he didn't teach me. Or maybe, I'd have to ask him, but he'll probably say nothing. You didn't teach me anything. I taught you everything you know. And it'd be true.
All right. Anyone else before we wrap this up? Yes, third row. Fourth row. I can't count, sorry.
There's a lot of weird stuff in the movie, but I think the weirdest thing is the gelatinous cube, and I was wondering if you could talk more about where that came from.
I don't know what that is.
I know. We, you know,
we didn't either.
Yeah,
when we started.
Yeah, Corey and I weren't big fantasy fans. We didn't know a lot about fantasy, but as you can imagine at Pixar, there's lots of fantasy fans that were on our teams, great artists, and they were really good about getting to the specificity of fantasy, and gelatinous cube is kind of a deep cut for us, but for real fans, it's kind of a classic giant gelatinous creature that goes through dungeons and just destroys everything in its path. I just thought it sounded funny and desperately wanted it in the movie.
We've got time for one last question. We'll go front row. Yes, hi. To the mic. Let's go.
Hi. So I am a huge fantasy nerd and D&D nerd, and my husband and I met because I used to run a LARP, and so we've, you know, had dragons and gelatinous cubes and all of that, and I don't actually have a question. I just want to say thank you for just putting it out there in the way that you did, because it makes it so fun and brings it back to, like, the mainstream, and it's going to be really fun to see all of this new generations of kids, like, be able to explore this stuff and know what gelatinous cubes are. And, like, I'm just really excited about it. And also, thank you for introducing us to trash unicorns, which is now how my husband refers to me.
Oh, that story was going so well.
I know. Come on, it's Valentine's Day. Come on. Okay. Good. As long as you're pleased. Chris, any last comments on the couch before we wrap things up?
No, I'm just kidding. I think this couch is lovely. Yeah.
I want a YouTube series now where you just review couches.
Well, the problem with it, I'll tell you the problem with this couch, okay?
Yeah.
No one, it's designed for like an NBA player. Like no one's femurs are as long as this. So if I want to sit with my legs touching the floor, my back's not touching the couch. I gotta do this. It's the proportions are stupid. It's like I have to be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to sit at this couch comfortably, and now I have to sit like this. And I'm mostly concerned because I know there's a bunch of cameras. It's a terrible angle. Shoot, I don't know who came up with this couch. Hopefully, you're in this room and you feel shame. That's all. That's my only hope.
You guys, thank you so much for being here. Thank you guys all for your great questions today.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much. Thanks, guys.